Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at httpvoicerepublic.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
You are cleared for takeoff.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Sunday, August 11th edition of the Back to Us show with Anise, Sharon, and Kathleen.
Awesome. Hi. Funky intro. I loved it.
Thank you.
Hi.
All right, so guys, if you've been listening to us, you know that last week was our first full week of programming, well, almost our first full week of programming on the Back to Us Radio Network. That's right, guys. We are no longer just the Back to Us show. We are now a full network. Oh, my gosh. Every time I say that, it's just like, wow. Okay, so Tuesday nights, you got to check out comedian Reggie Jackson, and she's live at Cat's Cafe, and she's also on the air with us at Back to Us Radio. And every other Wednesday, we have Michelle Alexander with a girl's guide, and she's putting a girl's guide on air. And we've got two new programs in the work. One is Tico's Corner. That's with Tico Davis. That's going to start in September on Monday nights. And we are also working on a transgender awareness show that will air on Thursday. So stay tuned. If there's something that you want to hear that's not in the mix, just stand by. It's coming. So I also have to say welcome home to Sharon. Those of you who've been listening know that Sharon has been at the beach for a little while. She thought that she was a lifeguard on Baywatch, but, you know, we had to reset her expectations of reality. So, Sharon, welcome home.
What's up?
What's up, Sharon?
How's it going? Can you hear me?
Yes,
we
ma'am.
Can hear you. We can hear you.
Hi.
We can definitely hear you.
Hi, everyone. I'm not hearing
standing
ovation.
I know, isn't it so exciting?
I'm not hearing standing ovation.
Yeah,
press the little button for the applause.
You know, Sharon, it's not all about you. I know that you want it to be all about you all the time, but it's not all about you because today it's about how to be an effective educational advocate for our kids.
That's what's
so,
up.
That's right. That's what's up. So, guys, I know that many of you are used to listening to us cut up and be silly and, you know, have really fun topics, but for probably the next 60 or 90 days, we're going to hit some really, really important topics. And, you know, they're a little different than what we normally talk about, but they are things that we need to get out into the community, and this is information that we need to get in your hands, in your head, in your heart. So we're going to go there. So without further ado, we actually have two very special guests joining us today, and I'm so excited about this. So, Sharon, who do we have?
We have, I can't remember.
Really, Sharon?
I gave you all that fanfare.
Sharon's like, I know that I'm supposed to be on the show, so that's what's important.
I just had
we
the
have
biggest
Dr.
rally ever.
Okay, Sharon, time out.
Focus, Sharon.
Okay, remember the talking stick rule? Remember, I have the talking stick right now, okay? So focus. Okay, so we have Dr. Arkella Trimble, and we also have Karen Wesley Weaver, and both of these women are absolutely phenomenal. Sharon, do you want to do the bios or...
You can do the bios.
I can do the bios. Of course I can do the bios. Okay. So, guys, let me tell you about Dr. Trimble. She is the president of After You Incorporated, and they provide individual and group therapy trainings and assessment services. Dr. Trimble was also a former school psychologist, and she is particularly proud of the programs that she's running now because she actually has parent training programs, therapeutic retreats for women, and specialized programs to assist those in the helping profession. She's a licensed psychologist in Georgia, and she's worked with various clients in a number of capacities and settings, including but not limited to inpatient and outpatient hospitals and clinics, university counseling centers, and shelters. So let's give a warm welcome to Dr. Trimble, and thank you so much for joining us on a Sunday evening nonetheless.
Thank you for having me. Good evening.
And our next guest is Karen Wesley Weaver, and I have been following Karen. Well, actually, I've been stalking Karen on Facebook probably for about 3 years now. And Karen is a mother, an autism advocate, a writer, and an editor. And her blog is called Confessions of an Asperger's Mom, and that's on blogspot.com. And this is where she shares her stories about her boys, Red and Blue. And you know, some of the things that Karen writes, she just has me dying laughing because, you know, it's like one of those things where you're going, okay, I didn't think that anybody else thought that way or felt that way but me, and now I'm so happy that somebody else does. So welcome, Karen.
Why, thank you. I'm so
welcome,
glad to be here.
Welcome.
Thank you.
All right. So Kathleen was gracious enough when I came up with this, you know, when I was like, okay, I want to do educational advocacy. So Kathleen's like, well, you know, what's that all about? Because, guys, Kathleen and Sharon don't have any children other than my two children that they have so graciously adopted as their aunt.
Yes.
So Kathleen is like, if you know anything about Kathleen, Sharon and I are like mega nerds. Okay, Kathleen is like right up there. She's like a baby mega nerd.
Woo-hoo! Yes, exactly. That's how I like to describe myself.
Yes.
Baby mega nerd.
Baby mega nerd. So Kathleen is out there, and you know, she's pulling all these statistics, and my phone keeps buzzing because every time she finds a new statistic, she's like, oh my gosh, did you know this, and did you know that, and did you know this? And I'm going, okay, Kathleen, I have children who are part of those statistics. So yeah, I kind of knew it. So I'm going to let Kathleen share all of these statistics that she found because, I mean, the numbers are staggering, to say the least. So, Kathleen, give us some of the statistics about, you know, just in general for learning disabilities, because I think that was the one that just really jumped out at you the most.
Absolutely. And just like a background, we're talking about kids who, you know, have disabilities that are going through school just like any other kids, you know? So,
exactly.
Coming from a child who is, you know, I never had a, I mean, we were talking about this earlier. Anise and I were like, I'm an extreme extrovert. Like, I had never had any issues in school. So the fact that, was it 60% of kids with learning disabilities don't graduate high school?
Yes, 64%.
Yeah.
Compared to 73.9% of students in the general population. So, that, I mean, that's a huge number.
Incredible. And I don't know. I just think that, What is the disconnect here? You know?
Well, you know, and
what,
I think it's
coming from an outsider point of view, which I usually do on this show, to be honest. I'm always the one that's like, well, I don't know what I'm talking about here, but here's my opinion anyway. where would you feel like the disconnect comes?
I think the disconnect is in the fact that over 50% of the population has an undiagnosed learning disability.
Mm.
So how can you roll out and deploy resources to help when, you know, if the, I guess, people don't even realize it. And to give you all a little bit of story, how this show actually came to be, was, you know, a lot of times, especially doing this at the beginning of the year for parents, when my son was entering kindergarten, I knew that there were certain milestones that he needed to reach in kindergarten in order to be able to do well in first grade. And, but, you know, if this is your first child and you don't have a background in education and maybe you struggled in school yourself, you know, you don't have all of the resources and the tools. I mean, the information is out there, but if you don't know where to go to get it, like, for example, did you know that children who don't know, who struggle with their sight words in kindergarten typically are behind in reading in the first, second, and third grade? And if a child is behind in reading by the time they're in the third grade, if there's not appropriate interventions to help that child, by the time that child gets to the ninth or tenth grade, they will have dropped out. Mm-hmm. And those are just some staggering, you know, something staggering to really think about. So that's why today is so important, because we're going to talk to Dr. Trimble, you know, so that we know how to navigate through this educational maze of a system. And we're going to hear from Karen so that we can know, you know, how to handle this as a parent, because as a parent, it's very overwhelming. So,
well, and quite possibly, you know, some of the most famous people in the world are people with learning disabilities. And if they weren't pushed to see what their abilities were as opposed to focusing on the disability and quitting, you know, like Cher and Einstein, those are two random people, but they both have severe learning disabilities, and they are both two of the most people that are recognized in the world, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, and think about it like this, you know, even if you don't have children, tune in and listen to this information, because you may be able to help a niece or a neighbor. And, you know, I mean, because that's really what this is all about, is everybody taking a little piece of knowledge from the tree of knowledge and sharing the fruit with everybody else.
That's how communities function, you know.
There we go. All right, so Dr. Trimble, talk to us a little bit about, you know, let's say that I'm a parent and I know that my child is struggling and, you know, I don't know where to go. I don't know what to start with. But, you know, my neighbor next door has told me that I can just walk up to the school and ask for a 504 plan.
Okay. Well, you know, first, I, if you don't mind, I wanted to comment about what you talked about with the disconnect. One of the issues is, you know, when we talk, we do a lot of parent training. And one of the things that we're trying to do for parents is understand their initial role in their child's academic and behavioral development. So when you think about initially, we know that the first 24 months of life is the most brain development, right? So if during that time we do as much as we can for our children, we can increase the likelihood that they'll have more neuronal connections, which equates to more knowledge that they've acquired over time. So by the time they get to school, at least they will have had more of an advantage than if we didn't talk to them or read to them or take them places and expose them to things. So even though they're young, those first 24 months of life are so important. So we always talk about this primary intervention, which is doing as much as you can with them the first 2 years. So just wanted to put that out there. But the first thing in terms of the school setting, if you have a child that you suspect has some either academic or behavioral difficulty, I first always say talk to the teacher, because sometimes the issue can be resolved at the classroom level. And if we do that old school parent-teacher collaboration, usually we can get a lot of things resolved. But if that doesn't work, generally what they'll do is we have, and I don't know, in all the different states it's different, but like here in Georgia we call it the SST process. Some states call it the TST, which is teacher support team, student support team, or RTI, which is response to intervention committees. And there are committees of people usually comprised of a teacher, the parents, school counselor, school psychologist, other teachers who come together and they discuss the academic or behavioral issues of children and put interventions in place. So the first step would be to contact the school counselor or the teacher to see about this committee for your child.
Right. But so you agree that the disconnect there could start from a parent not realizing their resources and giving up before the child has a chance.
You mean the resources initially at home, or you mean at school?
Well, or just finding out all the resources, learning the whole story.
We can do a lot. What's happening, what I found, I worked in the schools for over 10 years, and what's happening is our children are coming to school not prepared. And I know that old adage about you all, our parents are the first teachers, they really are in all ways. And so if we can make sure that we still continue, and nowadays with all the available resources in terms of even if you didn't have the money, you know, there are free computer programs. Even at the dollar store, I usually buy every year flashcards for the kids and on all kinds of areas. So there's so many things that we could do initially before they even get to school that will lead them even more prepared. So that resource
is awesome.
There. Yeah, so I really encourage parents to do that. And you can do that at any age. I've done research with students in kindergarten even, and what we've done is if we gave weekly extra activities to parents, and they're simple activities like saying going over the colors with the children or looking at different things in the environment and talking about them, that we found by the end of the year, if we did just brief weekly activities, maybe 10 minutes, that child's academic achievement has increased over a year time compared to others who haven't done that. And that's research
right.
We've done personally. So you still can always help your child.
That is awesome news.
If I may intervene to say, this is Karen Weaver, the blogger mama. And a lot of times we know even before kindergarten, preschool, age 2 to 3, they're not talking the way that their peers are talking. They, you know, the language development is not there. Or you see behavior issues that are different than their peers. You can have intervention before they even start elementary school. They have preschool programs, at least here in Texas, and I'm pretty sure it's nationwide.
It is.
Where they can, you know, they can evaluate and determine whether or not there's an issue even before they start kindergarten. Because sometimes if you wait that long, you know, they're behind the curve. So I actually had both of my boys in a preschool program before, when they were both 3 years old, through the school district that I did not pay for, and they were receiving services before kindergarten.
Wow.
And that's under
phenomenal.
Federal law that they can get help at that age, and that goes back again to, and I think you discussed this earlier, about knowing the developmental milestones that children should have. And there are actually a list of developmental milestones that you can get off the Internet or talk to the counselors or the psychologists. We have developmental milestones that children should reach. So, if you know that as well early on, then you'll know whether, I should get additional help early on or not.
Exactly.
Now, where would the parents go to get a copy of those developmental milestones? Would they get that from their pediatrician during the checkups, or could they ask for that at their school?
The pediatrician actually would probably be the quickest way, but even a school psychologist, generally we can get you that information. Most times people don't even know they have school psychologists, because school psychologists generally only show up when you have issues. So we are not preventative staff people. So, but usually school psychologists have access to that information as well, and sometimes school counselors too.
Okay. All right. So let's say that we've navigated through the preschool years, and now we're entering, let's say, second grade. And, you know, we've heard a couple of parents mention an IEP and a 504 plan. Can you talk a little bit about that, Dr. Trimble, and tell us what an IEP exactly is, and, you know, how is that different from a 504, and, you know, is one better than the other one?
Oh, goodness. that's a
loaded
question. Yeah, it really is. Okay, well, let's go back just real quick. What happens is when you meet with that committee, the committee initially is going to develop. Now it has changed, so they're going to develop an intervention that usually is put in place for 12 weeks in general, unless it's some type of disability that is pretty pervasive that you can kind of tell that it's there, like maybe a Down syndrome or something like that where you can tell. But usually if it's a learning disability or behavioral issues, you'll have to wait 12 weeks for them to intervene and put some intervention in place, because what's happening is the laws have changed because we found that a lot of children, especially African-American children, were placed in special education without having any proper intervention prior to that placement. So now the schools have to show that they tried interventions in that general education classroom setting before they move them to another setting. Okay, so after that 12 weeks, and if they find that the child still has some issues, whether it's academic or behavioral, then they say, okay, you should probably be evaluated by a school psychologist. And then the school psychologist does an evaluation, and based on the data that was collected during those 12 weeks and based on the evaluation from the school psychologist and any other information, then they say, okay, what can we do for this child? And so either they can have an IEP or a 504, and the IEP actually is a special education function, whereas the 504 is generally a general or regular education function. And the 504 plan usually provides accommodations for physical or sometimes certain mental illnesses. So, for example, for a 504, you could have a 504 for schizophrenia, or you could have a 504 for ADHD, but you also can have an IEP for ADHD, or you can have a 504 just for something as simple as if you've broken your hand or broken your leg and you need accommodations in the school setting, like temporary 504s, whereas IEPs generally are done for things like traumatic brain injury, ADHD, emotional behavioral issues, and learning disabilities and things like that. So generally the primary difference, both of them provide accommodations for them in the classroom settings, but the primary difference is one is general education, one is special education. And generally IEPs have a little more weight in terms of accommodations as opposed to 504. Both of them you have to do by law. The school systems have to carry out, but the IEP usually has just a little more to it, a little more meat to it than a 504.
Okay. And Karen, I want to talk to you. I want to get your perspective, because you've actually walked through this entire process of getting the IEP and getting the accommodation. So can you talk a little bit about, I don't know how much you want to tell us about what your boys have the IEP for, but just talk to the parents for a moment a little bit about what that was like and what they can expect going into this. Because, you know, it sounds intimidating, but it's really, it's not as bad as people imagine it to be.
No, it really isn't as bad. And, of course, initially when I started out, I, you know, had no background, no knowledge whatsoever. So I have three boys. Two of them are on the autism spectrum. The oldest one is who has autism is 17. He's going to be a senior this year. And then I have a 14-year-old as well. And they're both on the spectrum, but they're both very different. And of course, the one who is 17, this was, you know, this was way back in, you know, he was born in 99. We ended up having him evaluated at age three and entered into the preschool program for children with disabilities with the diagnosis of autism. And he had his, we ended up getting an IEP together. It's really just been like an ongoing learning process. As you see the need, as you get more information, you put more things into place. I really haven't had any problem in getting things set up in order to support the boys in school.
Okay. And so when you, now they are, let's see, so you've gone through all three grade levels, like you've gone elementary, middle, and now you're in high school. So talk
yes.
for a moment about, you know, how do you transition with this IEP? Like, for example, somebody who just got an IEP and maybe their child is in fourth or fifth grade, you know, in a couple of years they're going to be going to middle school. So, you know, what does that, does the IEP change with the child? What has been your experience with that?
Well, the IEP is something that's done on we do it every year. There's you meet at least once a year to go over what the goals are for the coming year. So prior to going into middle school, we sat down, the team from the middle school came into the elementary school and sat down and talked to the team, the teachers and administrators that worked with the boys in elementary school so that we could see what their needs would be going into middle school. And the same process happened at the high school level so that everybody who was getting ready to get on board would already know, you know, what kind of services they have been getting, what, you know, needs they probably will need to have met in the next school. So, yeah, it's a collaboration usually between the middle school and the elementary school, and then the middle school and the high school.
Okay. And let's see, Dr. Trimble, so talk for just a moment about, you know, transitioning. Well, actually, I guess both of you could probably answer this one. You know, after high school and your child has an IEP, what happens after high school? Because the IEP just doesn't magically go away. So what if this child wants to go to college? What does that look like?
Well, generally, children can, in special education with an IEP, can receive services until they're 21 years of age in the school system in general. But once they leave, usually they have to have testing within a year of them leaving so that they can see how they're functioning for college. And so usually they'll be tested, and then those accommodations can go over to college. And a 504 actually can go to work with you and things like that. And so anyone can get a 504 usually in the workplace or in the educational place as well. But the IEP, generally they're tested before they enter college, and then they can get services based on that in the college setting.
Yeah, so I understand, because we're getting ready to face that as well, with my son being a senior, going in to be a senior this year. It's much more, the accommodations that are available in college, in the college setting, are a little bit different than what you might have available in the high school setting. So it's a matter of when they are in high school, we are building up their skills to get them ready so that they can, number one, advocate for themselves. Because once they turn 18, you know, if you don't have a guardianship, then they are making decisions for themselves, and they have to be able to go into a college professor or to a college situation and let them know what their needs are. And they may not be as giving as the accommodations may have been in high school. So that's also something that you have to consider, building them up so they can advocate for themselves.
And as a professor, I'm a professor, and actually what happens is when we can get in college, they don't have to tell us if they have a disability or not. And so, you know, if they do go, it is, we encourage them if they need to tell the professors so that they can get, and usually they will get accommodations. So I still provide accommodations for students if they need extra time, if they
right.
need to take their test outside of the room, if they, whatever the things that they need to the best of the ability of that university, we still provide it, but we're not required to know that they have it or not. So they would have to tell us.
Right. That's one of the things that actually for my son who's in middle school this last year, one of the goals for him was to work on his self-advocacy so that he knows what his IEP looks like. He knows what his modifications are. And when a teacher is not implementing his,
mm-hmm.
he will let them know. That I'm supposed to get this. I'm supposed to have extra time. And so that when, you know, it's not the mom who's always calling, you know, to tell them, you know, what the problem is. The student is acting, my son is actually speaking up for himself and letting them know what he's supposed to be getting. So that by the time he gets to high school and he gets to college, he's able to do that for himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Karen, I'm gonna press your brain for one more thing before Sharon is like, okay, and Sharon's like, we've got to take a commercial break. We've got to take a commercial break. She's like, but this is really good stuff. She's like, I'm soaking it all in. Okay, so we've talked for a lot about, you know, advocating for the children and getting them help. What about the parents who are navigating through this process and they need the support of other parents? Karen actually has a very, very wonderful online community. And so, Karen, talk to us about the online community that's kind of out there to support the parents through this.
Okay. Well, through the blog that I write, Confessions of an Asperger's Mom, we also have a Facebook page, a public Facebook page, where a lot of the parents connect, exchange stories, exchange information. We talk about medication. We talk about therapies. We talk about things that we're dealing with the school, you know, and so you get other parents who are going through the same thing or who have been through some of the same dilemmas are there to share information and share stories, and it has been one of the biggest blessings in my life. It's one of the best things that I think I've ever done was to get this community started. So everybody can come there. We socialize. We, you know, kind of let go of frustrations of dealing with the education system, with that, dealing with doctors and insurance companies and therapists, and we share information so that people know, you know, what's available to you, because a lot of times people just have no idea what is available. And having a community that you can turn to when you have questions is essential. And having, you know, being able to, you know, go to this blog or go to this page and get information on what should you do to prepare for your IEP meeting. You know, what happened when you went to your meeting last week? I mean, so you can benefit from the knowledge of people who have gone through it. And it's been a really, really huge blessing.
And, guys, she had a wonderful blog a couple of months ago called A Tale of Two IEPs. If you're Googling, find that blog, read that blog. I mean, this is kind of like having the insider stock trading tips that you're not supposed to have.
Yeah,
so.
Because a lot of times the school, it seems like a lot of times the policy of the school is if you don't ask, we're not going to tell you that this is available. And
that
so if you as a parent have not done your own research to find out what accommodations are available for your child, what, you know, what they are entitled to, what the school is legally supposed to provide, you may not get that. So I have a friend who teaches in one of the schools down in a lower income area here in Austin, and she told me that there are kids sitting in her class that she knows that are just like mine, because she knows them personally, who have no IEPs, who have no diagnosis, who have no, you know, education plan, and they're just sitting there in the classroom wondering why they don't understand, why are they, you know, acting out, why they're depressed or whatever the case may be, and they have no one who's advocating for them. And so it's really a blessing to be able to see what is available and be able to do the research and have a community that you can go to, you know, get this information so that you can help your children.
All right. Well, we are going to have to take our first commercial break for the night because we've got to pay some bills. I know that Sharon loves hosting the show with me, but I don't think Sharon wants to cover all the bills 100% by herself.
I don't have any money.
You don't have any money? We got to pay back the $2 that we borrowed?
Yeah.
All right, so guys, we are going to take a commercial break, and we are going to listen to music from Jen. If you listen to our show Thursday night, you know that we featured a new artist called Jen Jetson. For some reason, I kept wanting to call him Jen Jackson, but it's Jen Jetson, and he is a musician out of, like, this really far, far away part of Texas. He's in Texas, but it's, like, in drop-off Texas. so he has to go out and, like, use antennas and wire hangers and aluminum foil just to get a signal. So that's why he's not joining us today. But we're going to listen to his song called Awesome. So here's Jen Jetson.
Urban sci-fi production.
I forgot I muted myself. All right, well, hello, everyone. Welcome back to the last part of the Sunday Back to Us show. So, we covered a lot of stuff, didn't we, Sharon? Sharon?
Sorry. Can you hear me?
I know,
now?
It's a lot of stuff, isn't it?
And I'm looking at things or seeing things only from the point of view where I'm providing services to certain adults who have probably already gone through that process. So seeing how they came about or how they got to me is interesting.
The entire process, you know, and a lot of parents get – bogged down in the process, and, you know, they get frustrated and they give up. And, you know, the whole purpose of today's show was just to really put some education into the community to let parents know that, number one, it is a long process, and number two, no matter what, don't give up. Give out, take a rest, you know, take a time out, but be ready to get back up and keep going again, because, you know, you're fighting for your child's entire life, essentially.
Right.
Because remember, guys, those statistics were 64% of students who have a learning disability don't graduate from high school. That's huge. And these are 2001. So in 2001, if 64% didn't graduate, can you imagine what those numbers are 12 years later? It's huge.
Well, my 17-year-old son has told me many times that he doesn't want to graduate. He doesn't want to go to school. But I always ask him, well, where are you going to live? Because you can't live.
Wow. So this is obviously not the one that told y'all that he needs to find another family because y'all aren't Christian enough. This isn't that son.
Oh, yeah, that one. That one, too.
Okay.
He's all over the map. He's all over the map. No, but I have one who is, you know, 14, and he's, you know, he has his challenges as far as autism and social anxiety and things of that nature, but he's already got a plan. If you read the story, The Tale of Two IEPs, how different they are, one of them has already got his plans for postgraduate, I mean, for getting a PhD.
Yes,
and,
I saw
yeah,
that.
You know, right. And then the other one just wants to know how he can be popular in high school. And if he can't, then he doesn't want to go anymore. But not graduating is not an option here. So,
well, you know, and since you mentioned the IEPs, Karen's IEPs have something that, you know, I wish that as I was advocating for my own kids that I had thought about, because my daughter struggles in a school setting. And, you know, I didn't realize that it was an option to have a reduced day as part of an IEP. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I didn't either. See, you never know until you ask. And once I brought it up, I brought it up to my child's doctor, and she said, well, definitely, that would definitely work better for him. And when I brought the idea to the school, they knew it was available. They knew it was possible, but they told me that they couldn't suggest that. They can't suggest a reduced day. They can't suggest any reduction in service. So you have to do your homework yourself. You have to follow your instinct yourself. You have to read. You have to research. You have to talk to other parents and find out what's out there and what's available, because the schools may or may not tell you.
Right, and they can't tell you something like that, because then that would look like, and I don't work for the schools anymore, so I can tell you some of this stuff, but what happens is if they tell you that, then that would suggest that they don't want to give you, they have to show that they have provided the best services they can for your child. So if they say that looks like you're trying to take services away.
Exactly. But, you know, as a parent, you have to follow your instincts and figure out what would work best for your child. And anything that you feel like this would work for this particular situation, just bring it up. I mean, talk to your child's doctor, talk to the IEP committee, and, you know, just find out what the possibilities are, because they're endless. And, you know, the bottom line is that they have to do what, that's why it's called an individual education plan. They have to do what is going to work for your child.
And I want to get one more question in with Dr. Trumbull before I have to let you all depart from us for the evening. And I know that I'm probably going to get a lot of inbox questions after the show that I didn't get to answer on the show. So to our listeners, I'm apologizing in advance. I am sure that if we have a plethora or a cornucopia or a whole bunch of questions.
Why are you using all those big words?
Well, you know, when I, Karen, when I said it, I was like, okay, I need to use a smaller word. And then I was like, okay, I still didn't pick a smaller word. Okay, yeah, abundance, a lot.
Okay, how about, yeah, just a bunch.
A lot.
Just a bunch.
Yeah,
I tell y'all, we're like mega, Karen and I sit here and diagram sentences as each other are talking. That's.
But did you see my post yesterday about the Taco Bell?
I saw the, yes, Sharon, I know that you're very upset that Taco Bell made a grammar mistake in their advertisement.
Yes.
And I will personally write Taco Bell on your behalf and ask them to correct that, because I know that
they
bothers
said,
you.
They said collect all two.
Oh, okay, Sharon, it's okay.
They had
it's
two
okay.
tacos and said collect all two.
Dr. Trimble, sometimes I think I might need to bring Sharon in for an assessment.
Well, you know, I'm right. You can't say that. That's not right. Just collect them both.
So, okay, Sharon. Okay. Can I please ask Dr. Trimble the last question, please? Please.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Okay. So, Dr. Trimble, talk to us for a moment about, you know, the testing. Is it better to, well, not better, but, okay, let's say that I know that my child has a problem. I've been working with the school system to try to get, you know, we've got the meetings going on. Okay, so if I call you and set up an appointment and you do the testing for me, is that going to automatically jump me ahead in the line in terms of, you know, I can just walk into the school system with my testing already done and they can just give me an IEP and I don't have to go through all of this?
Yes and no. It used to, but still, you would still have to go through the RTI process. You still would have to get that 12 weeks of data. But the big problem sometimes with outside assessment, which is one thing that our company makes sure that we look at, is that sometimes psychologists on the outside don't do all the testing that's needed for the school system. So, for example, to get an initial diagnosis, you have to have a comprehensive psychological evaluation, which means you have to give a full IQ test and full achievement and things like that. And most times psychologists in private practice don't give full batteries. They give, you know, partial tests. And in the school system, they can't make initial diagnoses based on partial tests. So sometimes parents have spent a lot of money to get assessments that can't be used in the school system, and they still have to wait for the school psychologist to supplement what was done on the outside. So often what we'll do is have parents, when I was a school psychologist, I would give the parents that they said, you know, Dr. Trimble, I don't want to wait for you, because usually school psychologists do have a long list of students that they have to test, and they usually have to go in the order that they were given to them. And so if they say, well, I don't want to wait, I want to hurry up, then I would give the parents a list of tests that were needed for that particular diagnosis and see if they could find, give that to the psychologist and see if they can do those tests. And then that expedites. So when they come back with a psychological assessment that has all of the needed parts to it, then it does help them to move forward. So it just depends on the type of psychological evaluation they receive.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Trimble. Thank you, Karen, for taking the time again on a Sunday nonetheless. And, I, you know, it's some topics that I know that when I do them, I'm going to get a bunch of questions afterwards. So I would hope that you all have loved us enough that you would consider coming back on the air at some point so that we can do an educational advocacy 102 so that we can cover some of those questions that I know are going to be coming into our inboxes.
I need a 102.
Sure. I would love to, and if a lot of the things that I spoke about with the IEPs, people can find that information on the blog. I have about four different articles about IEPs, so there's really some helpful information there.
It would be great if you could send me those four links, and I will post them in our Back to Us page, because you know, I always post our show information in there. So I would love for people to be able to just click and access. So if you can send me those, I will definitely get that up for our listeners.
A lot of resources there.
And I would say just one final thing. If parents really, the schools, unfortunately, count on you not advocating. And those who advocate for their children, those who are at those meetings, who read the IEPs and look at the numbers, that's the biggest thing. Sometimes they'll say they set goals for your child and say, oh, yeah, they met them, but you have no idea how they met them. You need to make sure that you have them show you what they have done to get those numbers that they put in the IEPs to show what your child's progress. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
You have to make your presence known, definitely.
Yes.
And you've got to be you are your child's number one cheerleader, resource. You know, you've got to be your child's advocate, parents. You have to. It's too important to not to do this. So thank you, Dr. Trimble. Thank you, Karen. And
Thank you.
We love you guys on the Back to Us show, so hopefully you will come back and see us again.
Yes, thank you.
All right, have a great evening.
Thank you.
All right. Sharon?
Am I still on?
You are
still
on.
Is this mic still on?
Your mic is still on.
That was a lot going on. I didn't know what to say. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to think, what to feel, what to ask. Because
it
was just a lot.
Advocating for your child with special needs is overwhelming. And the way that you just felt overwhelmed just from that hour of information, can you imagine raising a child that you have to advocate for? That's how parents who are raising a child with special needs, that's how they feel all the time, Sharon. How you felt in that hour is how parents like me feel the majority of the time, because everything is coming at us so quickly. You know, and there's not a lot of time to process. And, you know, it's like nobody's really giving you all of the information that you really need, so you're having to get it piecemeal from here and there and put it together. And, you know, you're out there, you're fighting for your child. You're fighting for their life. And a lot of times you don't always have all of the information.
Right. I can't say that I know what that is like because I don't have any children, and I don't know anyone close to me or in my family, who has a kid with any special needs. I've talked about one family member who I believe definitely needs something, but the parents are, I think that they are ignoring it and not paying it any attention and not seeing it as an issue, but I'm just looking at this kid and just hanging around him and listening to the things that he says, and I'm asking myself, do they hear this? Do they see this? Are they blind? But then again, I don't know what all they have actually been through.
Right.
But just hearing all the IEPs and 504s and 501c3s, you know, all of it, you know. It's just kind of...
501c3s would be nonprofit business, Sharon.
Well, you know what I mean. It was a lot to take in, and in just a few minutes. So I can only imagine what it is like to take that in for 10 years, 12 years, all the way up until that kid is 18. And I didn't know that even after high school that there was an option for kids with special needs to receive additional care if they were still going on to college. I didn't know that happened anyway, because from my perspective and in the field that I work in, it doesn't seem like that's an option. You know, the people, they start receiving services for whatever, because I work with adults who have autism and they have other diagnoses as well, but some of those diagnoses also come with other physical limitations, and that's not always the case. But I see how they are viewed and treated by people in their communities. They're treated kind of poorly. So as a person who's working in this field providing direct care and things of that nature, it is important to advocate for that person. Because if you don't, then everyone else is just going to take advantage of them. And that person is not going to receive the services and the guidance that they need to live just a normal life. So it is important to advocate.
All right. So, guys, we are winding down our show tonight. Next week, we will have our transgender awareness show, so definitely tune in for that. Catch us on Monday with comedian Reggie Jackson live from the Cats Cafe. And she's funny. I love Reggie. Reggie is a hoot. And then Sharon is going to bring us a very special health version of Back to Us, where we're going to talk about how to get healthy. And that's going to be on August the 25th. So we've got a lot of good stuff coming up for y'all. We're going to close out the show tonight with Jen Jetson and Slow Down.
Thanks, guys.
So, Sharon, are you ready to take us home?
Well, play the music. Hit the button.
Really,
that's
Sharon?
That's taking us home.
Yeah, that's taking us home. Okay, so
play
I'm
the music.
Press the button.
Hit the button. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you guys tune in to see what's coming up next. And we got a whole lot of cool stuff planned, so keep tuned in.
Yes, we do. Tune in on Back to Us. We love you.
Peace.
Passion to burn. As many things we can learn if we
slow it down.
So we ain't gotta rush for nothing. It can be beautiful if we don't
move too fast.
As many manifest passion to burn. As many things we can learn if we
slow it down.
So we ain't gotta rush for nothing. It can be beautiful if we don't
move too
fast. Let's be honest, change our thoughts for a minute. I'm kinda digging your spirit. You got me open cause your aura is different. A lot of people like to rush to the bed before the friendship and wed. I'm trying to study every thought in your head. Tell me all about your dreams, things that make you mad. Let's bring quality and see what makes you laugh. I wanna pull pranks on you, watch you giggle and laugh. Feel me in on your existence, yes, the friends in the past. Are you family oriented? Is your family close? What morals were you taught by your family the most? What kind of movies do you like? I like the action of love. What type of soap you like to use? I like the zest of the dub. Love taking long walks in the parks at the dark. I love to snuggle real close and feel the beat of your heart. So many things we can learn while we're having a blast. Don't have to rush to the bed, don't move too fast. Let it manifest the passion to burn. As many things we can learn if we
don't.
So we ain't gotta rush for nothing. It can't be beautiful if we don't move
too fast.
In my belly, you're as cute as can be. A close encounter as I'm blowing off the ash from your leg. We both anticipating the magic, we converge to bed. The conversation is amazing, the way our spirits collide. I lay beside you and I swear that I can feel you inside. A lovely experience and we don't have to be touching. Been overdubbing every word you speak, I'm mentally grubbing. Henceforth, I want to look at you and know the words you think before you speak them. Long to know your every secret, make it possible to keep them. Death is fizzing, the certainty we commit to reveal. No bargaining with the devil, I'm making heaven a deal. Take out the time to learn the things that make you smile and cause your growth. Practice the communication that true partners ought to know. The process of becoming one reflective and profound. Imagine beauty in the moments where we choose to slow it down.
Slow it down, slow it down, slow it down. There's beauty when you slow it down.
We can just slow it down. We can just slow it down.
You have been listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.